Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A landmark moment in a career full of them. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, composer Steve Reich gives us a sneak preview of the most talked about piece of classical music this year. And later, young composer and pianist Timothy Andrus is no stranger to classical music. He'll join us to play live in the studio, plus our Soundcheck picks of the week. But we begin with Steve Reich, who won the Pulitzer Prize in 2009 for this piece, Double Sextet. Steve probably feels like his 75th birthday is just hurtling towards him, and no wonder. The classical music community just can't wait to celebrate that he's turning 1 year older. Although the actual big day isn't till October, his music has already starred in several tribute concerts worldwide, and there are many more to come. In fact, his newest piece, entitled WTC 911, will have its New York premiere by the Kronos Quartet at Carnegie Hall this weekend. He joins me now in the studio, Steve Reich. Welcome back.
Hi, John. Good to see you.
Oh, you sound so thrilled.
What do you want me to do?
Is it possible to have too much love from the... I mean, this birthday thing, it seems like we just did your 70th like a month ago.
Yeah, well, time... The older we get, the faster it goes. I'm on the five-year plan. The Russians, it didn't work for it, but it seems to work in classical music.
So it's like the big birthday bash has already begun.
Yeah, people create concerts based on birthdays. Fortunately, they also create them on non-birthdays. So life doesn't stop.
But still.
But this is more than usual, yeah.
Yeah. So already, although you're 74, you've got 75 staring you in the face. It keeps getting thrust in your face. And in terms of having something new to bring to all these parties,
right.
You do. I mean, you have this striking new piece called WTC 911.
Right.
There wasn't any connection between the... I mean, is this...
No. As a matter of fact, what happened was this. When 9/11 actually happened, I was working on Three Tales, which is, some of you may remember, was a video opera which caused a lot of sampling, a lot of electronics, and... while I was working on it, it wasn't completed until 2002, people, you know, who knew that I did documentary material said, well, what are you going to do about 9/11? I said, frankly, nothing. You know, I mean, I just have to finish what I'm working on. And when I'm done, I'm so fed up with samples and electronics, I'm just going to write for instruments and voices. And that's what I did for 7 years. And then 2009, last year, I got a call from David Harrington of the Kronos
Quartet. That would be 2 years ago.
Was that 2 years ago?
Yes.
I'm sorry about that. he said, well, you know, we'd like you to do a third piece for us, and we'd like you to use pre-recorded voices again. And I said, David, you know, for you, absolutely. But I hadn't a thought in my head. I was a complete blank. The only thing I could think of was this technical issue about extending the last syllable of what someone says, like you're a complete zero. Zero, and the O would go on indefinitely. Which is now possible to do mm-hmm. without changing its pitch. So, and then I thought, oh, well, that's great. Then it could be doubled by one of the violins, or it could be doubled by viola, and then the next speaker has something, or you say fish in the SHs, you have a noise band, and you build up these textures based on what's been said, so you sort of hear the memory, and it becomes part of the musical texture. Well, I have no idea who's talking. I'd say 3 or 4 months after, you know, David proposed this, I thought, wait a minute, I have unfinished business. As you definitely know, when WNYC was down in the municipal building, mm-hmm. I used to live a block and a half away from you at Broadway and Warren, 4 blocks from Ground Zero. And that's where we lived for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And the day it happened, on September 11th, 2001, Beryl and I were, my wife and I were in Vermont. But my son and granddaughter and daughter-in-law were in our place. And I got a call at 8:30 in the morning, you know, and saying, he said, well, I think they bombed the Trade Center again, because he couldn't see it from our apartment because there are large buildings in between. But he could feel it, and he certainly could hear it. So we all turned on the TV just in time to see the second plane hit. So I told him, don't hang up. And that was good advice. Mm-hmm. Miraculously, the phone stayed on for 6 hours. And to make a long story short, 6 hours later, our next-door neighbor got him and our neighbor's family and my family into a minivan. Somehow got drove north because you couldn't go on the east or west side of the highway. But this guy knew the streets, and he got up to Westchester. My half brother came in from Rockland. We came down from Vermont, picked everybody up, and for 30 days we couldn't come back in. Mm-hmm. So it was a major event in our lives, and it was not a media event.
And as you say, unfinished business. Although,
unfinished
did you realize
exactly.
that it was unfinished business?
Well, I didn't realize it was unfinished business until about, I'd say 7 or 8 months ago. And then it was crystal clear. Hmm.
So the result is this piece called WTC 9/11. And actually, the title bears a little more discussion. But let's hear a little bit from the piece. The work is being performed Saturday evening at Carnegie Hall by the Kronos Quartet, for whom it was written, and features the voices of...
Well, you'll hear right here at the opening voices of traffic controllers from NORAD, who were the first to notice that American Flight 11 was heading south instead of... Since it started from Boston, it should have been heading west to L.A., where it was supposed to go, but instead it was heading south, and that was the first bad news.
All right. This is from the forthcoming release due in September, but we're getting a chance to hear it first here on Soundcheck from Steve Reich.
They came from Boston on an airline, and I heard it sound.
That is the opening of Steve Reich's piece, WTC 9/11, a work getting its New York premiere at Carnegie Hall this Saturday night by the Kronos Quartet at 8 o'clock, and the Nonesuch recording that will come out in September.
Yeah,
this is a very rough mix of it, but it's the opening of the piece.
Yep, it is.
And three Kronos Quartets,
well,
basically.
Two of them pre-recorded, one live. Mm-hmm. It can actually be played by three quartets live because the tempo is constant throughout the piece.
And the tempo, the rhythm and the initial pitch comes from that sound of the telephone.
Yes, if you leave your telephone off the hook, at least here in New York City, and I think North America and perhaps elsewhere, you get, after a while, after several annoying announcements that tell you to hang up
your phone, yeah.
This is a recording, you finally get this really nasty beep, which is an alarm, which is meant to be heard even though you're in some other room. And when I heard it, I just had the the eureka experience. This is it. This is how the piece begins.
Mm-hmm.
And as we discussed earlier, it turns out to be an F. So David Harrington, first violinist, plays an F with the phone, and pretty soon there's a E natural. And this sets the tempo and the tone of the piece. And the whole first movement just has this, and then it comes back again at the very end of the piece.
And for you, on the phone that day with your son,
yes,
in your apartment, desperately trying not to hear that tone, you know, that you wanted him to stay on the line.
Exactly. Well, as you know, the phones went out in New York. So when he called me and we were in Vermont, the first thing I told him was, don't hang up.
Right.
And fortunately, that stayed open for 6 hours.
So there's also a striking thing that happens to these NORAD voices, you know, the controllers
yes.
noticing that the plane is off course. And you alluded to it before, which is each time we hear the voice, we then hear that voice kind of trailing almost like a
vapor
sonic cloud. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's basically what happens is that there's a program. There are probably several programs, actually. I guess most people who are listening would have seen stop action in a movie. You come, I think Truffaut used it, lots of people have used it. You come to either the end of the film or it's a part in the film and suddenly you have a freeze frame and everything stops. It's like looking at a still because film and video basically is a series of stills. Well, I often thought back in the 1970s, gee, I'd like to do the sync soundtrack for that. Well, that was impossible to do because in those days, if you slowed down a tape, you'd get Darth Vader. So, you know, now you can actually stop on a moment, whether it's a pitch or a pitch, a noise, as it was happening as you faded out there, no contact with the pilot whatsoever, the R becomes a growl, which is what the final consonant is. But that sort of connects one speaker to themselves as they continue and then to the next speaker. So you have these vapor trails or clouds of the final pitch or noise band of the previous speaker, which sort of gives the piece of a very special character and also connects one character to another harmonically and psychologically.
Now, speaking of the psychology of this piece, it's really striking because, of course, people listening to it will have an emotional response, but the piece has an almost dispassionate tone to it, you know, almost like a documentary or journalistic approach. What was your thinking with the way you came to this piece?
Well, precisely that. I mean, I don't want to make up 9/11 fantasy or anything remotely like that. Whenever I approach any documentary event, which I have, Dibbon Trains and then The Cave and Three Tales, I want to go to the participants, those people who were there and who will simply talk about their lives at that time. So the traffic controllers are obviously seeing something on a screen and they're reporting that. And what you're hearing is their reporting. The next voices you hear are the members of the New York City Fire Department. And they are right on the ground, and some of them are very confused because when the first building came down, we on television who weren't underneath it could see, oh, it came down. Oh, there's all this dust. If they were down there, they didn't know if the building was down. They didn't know if the other building was there. They couldn't breathe. They couldn't see, and often they got buried alive. Sometimes they got dug up.
Mm-hmm.
So those voices carry that reality with them in their tone of voice. These are, you know, what they call field communications inside the fire department. So that authenticity, if simply reflected musically, will automatically be accepted because it is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not trying to create some fantasy. The latter part of the piece goes into interviews that I made with friends and neighbors who lived in Lower Manhattan and who, one of them is David Lang, a composer we both know, who simply says, I was walking my kids to school, which is exactly what happened when a plane went over his head and he had to duck.
Mm-hmm. And the one of the other sets of voices, women who were sort
right.
of sitting with the bodies, the Jewish custom of Shemira, which gets to the other meaning of WTC.
Right. Also, David Lang, I have to give him credit. I stole this idea, but I told him I would, and he's in the piece, so he's a collaborator now. Best if you're going to steal to rope him in, right?
Right, right. And as David has said, hey, I'm in a Steve Reich piece. How cool is that?
Anyway, he pointed out that WTC also could mean world to come. And when 9/11 happened, I read in the Times an article which struck me because I had been involved in Judaism for a number of years, but I didn't know about this practice, which is basically that within traditional Judaism, when a person dies, you don't leave the body alone from the time of death until burial. And that's done for two basic reasons, one of which is, you know, you don't want insects and in the old days animals or even grave robbers or what have you disturbing the body. And on a spiritual level, we believe that the neshama, the soul, sort of hovers over the body waiting for it to be buried, which in Judaism happened as soon as possible. And then the soul is free to go wherever it goes. So it turned out that there were women going to Stern College on Lexington and 30th, very close to where the bodies were kept near NYU Hospital over on the east side of Manhattan. at the time, who volunteered to, during the Sabbath period when you can't take a subway or a taxi or whatever, walk over and basically say psalms, sing psalms, chant psalms, say parts of the Bible for hours at a time in tents set up next to refrigerated trucks where bodies and really mostly parts of bodies were. And I was very struck with that, and I was able to track down two of these women, one of whom was formerly the president of Boosie and Hawks, my music publisher.
Yeah. We're speaking with Steve Reich about, among other things, his new piece, WTC 911. The recording that we heard a bit of will come out, thanks to the folks at Nonesuch, around September 11th this year. But the piece is being performed at Carnegie Hall this Saturday night at 8 o'clock by the Kronos Quartet, with whom you have worked for a number of years now.
Yes.
You mentioned, you know, being involved in Judaism for many years. A lot of your earlier works were kind of secular in nature. Beginning with Tehillim, we begin to hear a lot more of your interest in Judaism.
Right.
Which came first, that interest or, I mean, did music somehow trigger that, or was music a response to?
Music was a response. I got involved around 75, 76. Well, in 1975, I got back into practice of Judaism. And it wasn't until 1981 that I felt, gee, I'd like to I'd like to express that by using a text, and what better text to use than the Psalms? And Tehillim was also a pivotal piece for a lot of musical reasons. But I mean, you know, a double sextet, which would be done, and 2x5 are definitely secular pieces.
Mm-hmm. But this piece, Tehillim, from 1981 by Steve Reich, sort of a pivotal moment in his career. Here's just an excerpt. Music from my guest, Steve Reich, the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer. His 1981 piece, Tehillim, based on the traditional, well, I was going to say, not based on, but inspired by the cantillation
techniques. No, nothing to do. That's a common era. No, actually, the chanting of the Psalms in the West is going to be completely lost.
Mm-hmm.
The only Jews on earth who have a living tradition of Psalms are the Yemenite Jews. And so over here in the West, if you hear people singing psalms in a synagogue, it's probably some borrowed tune from the church or a popular song from Eastern Europe or who knows what. Sometimes it's just said. So that gave me a green light to compose. So what you hear in Tehillim is me. You like it? It's me. You don't like it? It's still me.
We heard the Schoenberg Ensemble and the percussion group of The Hague. And there was a period of time in the 70s when, you know, performances of your music were done by you and your band, Steve Reich and musicians.
Right.
Now you go from Portland to Poland, and especially this year when people want to celebrate your 75th birthday, they're just lining up to play your music. And that now extends, you mentioned the piece 2x5 before, which is essentially a classical work for two rock bands.
Exactly.
Rock musicians are getting into the act as well. Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead, for example.
Well, he's not going to play 2x5, but he is going to play Electric Counterpoint, which was written for Pat Metheny. I think we're, you know, the people who are actually on the recording of 2x5 tell the whole story. Mark Stewart, who is no stranger to a lot of listeners of this program, is, you know, trained as a classical cellist at Eastman, plays with Bang on a Can as an avant-garde classical musician, reads anything you put in front of him, but he's the lead guitarist and the music director for the Paul Simon Ensemble, and at the Grammys you could see him out front.
Mm-hmm.
And so on Monday he's a rock musician, and on Wednesday he's a classical musician, and, you know, whatever you like. Same thing for Bryce Dessner, who a lot of people here also know. Went through Yale School of Music, read anything you put in front of him, but he and his brother run the National, which is a rock group. This is something that's happening now, and it's very, very, very gratifying to see. Johnny Greenwood, who you mentioned, I understand, was originally a violist at Oxford.
And a big Messiaen fan.
And a big Messiaen fan, which you can hear in his Let There Be Blood music.
So he'll be doing your Electric Counterpoint as part of these 75th birthday concerts that are happening all this season and probably next season as well. there's been so much change in the music world since you entered it.
Right.
You're about to turn 75. If you had, I know this is kind of a corny question, but if you had the ability to go back and talk to that 25-year-old Steve Reich, what would you tell him?
I'd say, hang in there, man, hang in there. Which is basically what everybody does. Music is an addictive vocation, and I don't think people get into it who don't want to stay with it. I mean, we have all kinds of stories and all kinds of variations, but if you're not really, really in love with it, you probably won't be around too long.
Well, so this is a love affair that's lasted a good long time for you.
Yeah, I suspect it'll go till I leave.
All right. Steve Reich has been my guest on Soundcheck, and the piece called WTC 911 is getting its New York premiere at Carnegie Hall this Saturday at 8 p.m. In the background, you're hearing a little bit of Steve's piece, City Life. This excerpt, Heavy Smoke, uses recordings from the first time the World Trade Center
was
bombed.
You're right. That's absolutely true.
In 1993. Steve, I know there's lots going on this season. Thank you for taking some time and saying hello to us today on Soundcheck.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
Up next, we share our picks of the week, and then later, a live performance from the young pianist and composer Timothy Andrus. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck.